Hello, and welcome to this episode of Pints and Pairings. I am Curtis Taylor, also known as Hop It's In.
And I'm Jason Hendrick from Everybody's Hungry.
You know, before we get going, I'm going to do things a little different and say...
Switch it up. Hey, you're the producer.
Here's our sponsors. Our sponsors tonight are, of course, as with every Pints and Pairings, the beer is generously supported or brought to you by, given to us, whatever it is. I'll figure out the verbiage later. Why do that beforehand?
No, the beers are brought to us with the support from.
God, that is so great. That's like a PBS.
Pints and Pairings is brought to you with the support from the Beer Cave, located in Camarillo, California.
231 Village Commons Boulevard, that is in Camarillo, California. My favorite beer store. We talked about it, and I won't go on ad nauseum here with it. But a great place to go get some beers right off the 101 freeway. Just hop off, get your beer. Hop back on and get home. That's a great one. And then also we're driving. That is how Jason is getting home this evening. We've done maybe two other late night or Thursday night shows.
Yeah.
And so we've done three. Two of the three, you've used the service.
I'm usually the fortunate recipient of having to broadcast downtown Ventura, like either Barrel House 101 or previously when it was back at the Buzz Radio Studios, where I could walk home.
Right.
You didn't have that luxury.
No.
I'm in your shoes now. Right. I'm a man who walks in or who rides in your passenger seat.
That's right. A fantastic driving service. Go to weirddriving.com. That is W-E-R-E driving.com. Whether you use them or another one, the important thing is just to be responsible and respect yourself, your family, and the people around you and all that good stuff, you know, without getting too mushy. But take it easy. I mean, we're having fun. But we know how we're getting home, so that's
true.
That's the plus side of this.
I have to tell you, I'm excited about this beer and about this segment for two reasons.
Shoot it.
One, they've got an obscure. This is from Dogfish Head. It's their 61-minute. And
61-minute IPA.
Yeah, typically they've broadcast their advertised their 60, 75, and 90, and then 120-minute IPAs. I've never heard of the 61, so it's obscure. It's unique. I'm intrigued from that reason. But two, we got a couple of live audience members who are going to be engaging on this one. And I'll give a shout-out to our friend Fritz Leon, who is our cheesemonger. And I want him to try to help us figure this beer out. We're going to talk about the beer for a little bit, but I see him online right now. We're engaged in a little conversation, and I know he's going to have some cool cheese recommendations based on your perspective and your expertise with this beer, Curtis. Give us the stats on this.
Well, this is if you can you pass me that bottle so I don't have to grab. Well,
sure will.
I've got it right here. You know, so we're no strangers to IPAs, like we've said on occasion before. We love them all. We're in California, and if you don't drink an IPA, then you know what are you doing? And leave it to Dogfish Head to go a whole nother route with an IPA because I mean I've had this. One other time, when I bought this not too long ago, last week somewhere, I came home with it, and I thought sounded interesting. So you've got their 60, which is the normal one, their regular IPA, and the numbers come from, they've got this little conveyor belt that shakes hops into it continuously throughout the boil, and so you get all these complex hop flavors, bitterness, flavors, and aromas the whole way through because a little bit of hops are being shaken into the boiling wort through the whole process. So they've got, first it was the 60, then it was the 90, which is my favorite one, by the way, because it's a straight out double IPA. And then they've got the 120, and the 120 is a little too sweet for me.
It's heavy and sweet for me. It's really malty.
Really, really heavy. The 60 is, I should go back to it. At the time that I had tasted it, it was more like an XPA where it was just one-sided hop bitterness.
Once you start to get, like with the 120 though, once you start to really just jam the hops into a beer, you have to give it a sweeter backbone in order to balance that out. So I can understand that. This is coming in just like the 75 and 90, kind of in the middle.
Mm-hmm.
And
well, then let's go. Let's hit the 75 real quick. So they've got a 75-minute IPA, which is brewed with maple sugar, and so it has a distinct maple syrup sort of flavor. It's a very nice one, and it has a hop backbone to kind of balance that out. This one is their 61, and so it was continuously hop for 61 minutes, and then it was brewed with Syrah grape must, and so it's got a red a red color, a red flavor, I was going to say, and a red aroma even.
The Syrah grape must is really interesting as an ingredient for me because it doesn't come across as grape must. It adds a fruitiness to it, but not in the way you would expect smelling backyard grapes or Syrah grapes, like in a winery would be. It comes more tropical for me, almost in a like a Lilikoi kind of passion fruit or guava nose, where you're getting a floral sweetness and not necessarily just the grape sugary sweetness.
That's interesting because for me it was grape must the whole way, and just drawing from my experience when we did a happy hour show at Four Bricks Winery, which is a local winery here, and you work for them, with them, and do all kinds of fun stuff with them. They were actually fermenting when we were there for that show, and the whole room smelled like fermenting wine. And that's kind of what I get out of this, right? It's not a hop flavor, aroma. It is more grape is what I get.
Interesting. Well, we're definitely both hitting on the fruit nose. Even regardless of which fruit we're identifying, we're getting that fruit sweetness minus the hops. There is a certain level of vanilla to me, to the nose for me, though, as well. So you're referencing a winery. A lot of times when you're in the winery, you're getting those woodsy vanilla aspects because of the barrels that are being used in the aging and sometimes the fermenting process, you know, depending on which phase of the process they want to introduce their barrels. I'm getting some of those vanilla tones, but minus the woodsy aspect as well. So I'm getting a lot of fruit, a little bit of vanilla, almost to the point of like a coconut sweetness, but it's not that tropical. The tropical for me really dissipates at the fruit level, not the finishing tones.
Yeah, and one of the things I find really interesting about this beer, though, is that for an IPA, is where are the hops with it? This would be the beer that you give to your wine drinking friends.
Yeah, this is for me it would be an introductory IPA. And Len's, you know, on our previous episode when we were talking about the Mammoth IPA 395, where it was juniper and sage and more of a hop presence. In contrast, this is almost no hop presence and speaks a little bit more to the Midwestern style IPA that I'm grown to be accustomed with by traveling back home to Indiana. Whereas the Mammoth in the previous episode was totally at opposite odds with this beer. I enjoy it, though. It's a 6.5% ABV. It's coming in at only 60 IBUs, which explains the absence of the hops.
Right.
But it's a really fun introductory IPA because although the hops aren't forward, there's some tones that are reflective of hop presence.
Right, and I think what I find interesting is the resonating characteristics of hop flavor and grape must. And so this, I don't even know if I'm going to be able to explain this, but I can taste the hops in it. It's not the bittering. It's not the sensation of bitterness. It's the hop flavoring. And they are very similar to what's happening, complementary, I should say, to the grape must. They go very well together, which is surprising to me. There isn't a hop flavor and then a wine flavor.
No.
And then a bitterness. It's not like there's these three distinct beers. Yeah, there isn't three distinct beers of a disconjointed sort of beer. This thing is a smooth flowing from start to finish, and everything just complements the next aspect that's coming in. You know,
I'm hesitant to use the word, but it's the only thing that's really coming to my mind when I listen to you describe it, and it's a muddled profile. Like you said, there's not a distinct, you know, stage one of my palate is this flavor, stage two is a separate flavor. There's just kind of this melding of flavors along the way, you know, sweetness into a little bit of a hoppiness, but really kind of subdued, and a muddled, enjoyable journey through this beer.
So one of the things I'll just point out is that muddled is generally not a a pleasant term, which I know I know that, or a complimentary term, which I
right.
know that you
no,
understand.
No, it typically
that.
Has a negative connotation.
And it's hard to find that. And other than being complimentary or melding, which is kind of what's happening, is which is nice surprise for me. I'll have to come clean. I had this beer a few nights ago.
Oh, you did a little pre-show research.
I had one just because I thought this would be interesting to do, to have, to taste. And it came out of my beer fridge here behind me. Now, the bottom part of this is super cold. We're talking like 34 degrees down there.
Yeah, you like to keep things crisp.
Well, the stuff that's just aging there, and then my kegerators are actually sitting at around 48 degrees. And so when I drink these, or when I decide that's what I'm going to do, I usually pull them up, let them come up to temp.
Okay.
But I drank it way too cold. You have to let this beer warm up in order for this to come into itself and be enjoyable. When it's cold, it's one-sided carbonation and grape juice, and it doesn't work well.
You know,
but as it's warming up and things are starting to come together, I'm starting to enjoy this beer much more than I did a few nights ago, and I'm starting to pull out some of these complimentary things. You know, I was really worried that we weren't going to find anything to pair with it, because I'm not a wine pairer. I mean,
and I'm hoping that my next statements don't come off unappreciative of this beer. But as it warms up, you know, you're referencing the temperature rising and allowing some of those aromas and esters to really escape the glass, but also complementing some of the sweetness in the glass. It's leaning a little bit towards a mead for me in the way it's reflecting the sweetness, like a floral honey kind of
right.
direction.
Well, and I think these are good descriptors for somebody who is looking for a beer that is going – that. True to Dogfish's statement, off-centered ales for off-centered people, that this is just off of that center. When I probably not just off, it is way off of the center for an IPA. And you know, who really would have thought to come up with this combination of Syrah with an IPA? I could have seen maybe some other maltier beers that may have worked well with it, but this one worked well. Food pairings. So we've got, as soon as you mentioned cheese, I'm like, oh, this is the out that I need.
I know, and I'm going through my list of previous cheese pairing events that we've done to try to hone in on one that I think would work well.
Because there's nothing better than cheese and beer. I mean, those two are just so good.
They're natural, they're friends.
Like, right.
If you see two... If you were walking down the street alongside a park with playground equipment, you could see a beer bottle and a wheel of cheese hand in hand or arm in arm kind of skipping through the grass because they worked together. There's, depending on the style of beer and the proper cheese pairing, you can really accentuate the nuttiness or the sweetness or the creaminess of both sides.
Right. Yeah. And... the other thing that people, if you're going to do wine, what always goes with wine? Cheese. And so I'm just thinking that this hits both of those along the way. I was thinking actually going towards the, is it Manchego? There's one that has like a port.
Rind?
Rind. And so then you have just a tiny bit of wine taste in the cheese as well, which I think would go, and I'm trying to, I'm blanking on the name, but it's a wine rinsed.
I'm not following you on that one, but I know where you're going with it. I think what I'm really kind of targeting this Cremeau de Argental that we had when we did the Four Bricks cheese and wine pairing, kind of leading in the same thought process that you're talking about. The reason I'm picking that one up is because the description said it was reminiscent of whipped butter and really taking my mind back to that moment, that creaminess and that heavy buttery nuttiness has a certain sweetness but not a sugary sweetness that we are picking up a little bit. This almost is starting, especially as it warms up, it's starting to get a little bit of like a fresh maple, like almost like a sap kind of sweetness.
Yeah.
And the creaminess, butteriness is going to add a rich pairing to that. I think that could now don't get me wrong. I mean, that's going to be a mouth coater. It's going to you're going to feel like you need to rinse away with some crisp water or some fresh vegetables, I think, once you're done with both of those two pairings. But it should be really decadent when you put them together.
And you know, when you're talking about it's a palate coater, yeah, because you're wanting this beer to warm up a little bit, which means it's going to sit a little heavier on your palate as well. The other thing, as you're talking about it, it kind of made me think about nuts. And so just as as walnuts or hazelnuts, maybe even some almonds, just a little bit of sweetness as you're doing your tray. You know, you've got some cheese and you've got some nuts, and then you just, as you're working down, because that is another thing that just you can't go wrong with on a beer is any kind of nut pairing. But those are also things that can help kind of draw forward some of these flavors that are kind of hidden in the beer.
Yeah. And what I love about this show, every time we sit down together, it's almost like we're tourists in a new city and we've signed up for one of those organized walks, right? Someone's behind, you know, walking with their back to everyone else, and they're looking at you going, we're walking, and on your left you'll see this, and on your right you'll see that, and oh, pay attention to this. Because we're talking about cheeses. How can we hone in on some cool cheeses? So I pull up my document from our previous cheese event pairing, and I start talking about the Cremo de Argental. Well, two paragraphs down, there's also a cheese, the Sumatrain Bertal. I don't think this particular cheese is going to go well with this beer, but there's a note about it being a little garlicky, and it started my mind reeling. Like, garlic, when you caramelize garlic, it's a great, sweet, nutty pungency, right? It just creates this buttery, velvety mouthfeel. Mm-hmm. Without this cheese being the right pairing, what else has that reflection in its profile? What if, like, a great Asian, like, garlic chicken, like a stir fry with a little bit of a glaze? You know, you're getting not an orange glaze, because I think that the citrus is a little too much for this, although it could act as a great palate cleanser in a wash through. But a really interesting, like maybe even a garlic beef, you know, like some little bit of ginger and bamboo shoot, something really cool that's going to throw you a bit of a curveball, but also have some resonating tones with that earthy sweetness from the garlic, especially if you caramelize it just right.
So this is going to be one of the suggestions that if it's just no, just say no. That is not going. But as you're talking about some of these, I'm thinking about cooking with wine. Okay, so we've got this beer that has wine components in it, wine flavor components, like a chicken marsala, or even just a red sauce with wine in it. Now, red sauces are really hard. I mean, tomatoes are hard to do anyway, although I think you can do it easily with beer, with brown ales and some other maltier beers. But something that has that a component of tartness, and maybe it's not the marsala, or maybe it was just a different kind of chicken marsala that I had.
No, I think you're on a very good track. I would not say no to we'll throw that contradiction out the window. What I like about where you're going is I don't know that tart and tangy, like true tart and tangy, you know, some people really like their like tomato sauces very savory with a lot of herbs and tartness and tangy from the tomato. I wouldn't go that direction entirely because I think it'll actually sour this beer a little bit if it's too tangy and too herbaceous. But my mother used to always throw, like she did spaghetti sauce, start with a great tomato base. Sometimes she'd get jarred sauce as a base, but if we were crushing tomatoes in the season and you know making a great sauce to begin with, she would sprinkle in a little bit of brown sugar. And I think that would be the way to go. You could have some of that tang and that acidity from the tomato sauce as long as you temper it. If you cut it a little bit with something that's sweet, that would pull out some of the similar sweetness tones of the beer. Again, it's not a sugary sweet beer. It's not a real malty aspect of this IPA, but there is a certain level of sweetness to it. Mm-hmm. And you can heighten that without making it kind of a syrup influence.
Right.
By maybe a little bit of brown sugar, a little bit of molasses, mm-hmm. something that has sweetness, but maybe just a pinch of smoke, you know, that would help with that. And so your Marsala, your pasta, your Italian direction, I think opens up a lot of opportunity to experiment. But again, I think the acidity and the herbaceousness of a straight savory tomato sauce or a savory base mm-hmm. is going to be a little too much.
Yeah, I'm just trying to think. As soon as you said a brown sugar, that's you just know that's a flavor that's going to go well with this beer and on the light side. And so I'm trying to think of some other possibilities of that, and maybe not that this is necessarily a brown sugar dish, but like a creme brulee possibly. And what I'm thinking about is like the caramelized. Whatever it is that the brulee on the top?
Yeah.
Whatever it is. So something of that nature to lend a little bit of sweetness back to it.
And I like just because we're getting close to our mark, you threw one more out there. You gave me a softball almost. Because as I'm trying to close my eyes, I have no more beer in my glass, but there's enough aroma still lingering in there. As you're talking, I closed my eyes and I took a big whiff. And you're talking about brulee and you're talking about sweetness. What if we went with something simple like, you know, in the summertime you do grilled peaches with like a creme fraiche, or for a more warming style dish, a great poached pear with a vanilla ice cream, like a vanilla bean ice cream, something that's giving you some of the sweetness, but also, again, I think this beer could use a little smokiness, whether that's through a roasty direction or more of a smoky char kind of influence.
Right,
throw some poached pear with or grilled peach with some chopped mint and a little creamy component.
Mm-hmm.
And I think we could have something really fun for dessert.
Yeah, this may be, even though we struggle a little bit with maybe the fruit beers, and we certainly didn't struggle at all with the 395 IPA. This one was just because it's such a unique sort of beer that, when you come into tasting something so unique, it's kind of tough to pinpoint until you've had a lot of experience.
Once you get the wheels in motion,
right?
You know, you start heading towards some stuff that, even if they're not spot on, they start leading you in the proper direction.
So I mean, as takeaways for this one, something that has a brown sugar sweetness, maybe it's a crumb top.
You know, that would be delicious.
And with some, we were talking about buttery goodness.
And with a crumb top that adds that buttery sweetness, you could have a filling, like we've talked about in previous episodes, maybe like a strawberry rhubarb that does have a little bit more of that sour tartness that you were alluding to and balances that back out. Wow. We do know a real fantastic beer baker. We should talk to her about this beer and
push it.
Yeah, we see if we can come up with something and use this maybe as our first show that we actually make one of the recipes or make one of the suggestions we've talked about and see how it pans out. We keep talking about that. We keep teasing the fans and the audience with actually leveraging a suggestion we've created in real life, and we haven't done it yet, so maybe this is the one we can pursue.
Well, I'll keep a couple of these out and we'll hold on to them. Who knows if this is a one-off beer from them? I don't know. But you want to make sure that you go get your beer, you know, ask for this at your local beer store. I think we've come up to our time limit on this one, and we'll just say that, you know, this is one of those ones where we get to cut ourselves a break because, one, we've called ourselves beer suggestioneers. There was nothing said about being experts in
beer
pairings.
No, definitely not.
In being beer pairings, but beer pairers. But just hopefully we've been able to kind of open up the conversation on this beer, too, a little bit. And
yeah.
And the excitement of a beer that has wine in it. I mean, truthfully, I was not really excited. But I still purchased it because I was interested in what it was. But
I'm all about trying for the sake of trying. And you know my mantra, if the meal you've made or the beer pairing you put together just plain sucks, you can always order pizza.
Well, and then you're still eating and drinking beer.
Yeah, so get yourself a great lager as a backup or a pilsner and order pizza, and that's the remedy for any crappy pairing.
Yeah, and it's never really crappy. Oh, hey, there's my timer.
There you go. That's our signal.
That is the signal. So, go to all of the – follow us at Hophead Said and Everybody's Hungry. Hashtag Pints and Pairings and hashtag Beer Suggestioneers. You can find us, join in our conversations. Leave a comment below wherever you're watching this, whether it's YouTube or iTunes or the webpage, whatever it is. Let us know if you've had this and what worked for you or what didn't work for you.
And like a great base runner stealing third into home plate for the win, our beer cheesemonger, Fritz Leon,
yeah,
he says, try out Drunken Goat cheese from Spain. Do the Drunken Goat, put it with this beer, and see how it turns out.
How did we miss goat cheese?
I don't know, but that's why Fritz was our resource on demand.
Goat cheese sounds good. And
thanks for that recommendation, buddy.
Not only goat cheese, but then you generally put something else on top of it too. So you've got the fruit, jelly spreads, whatever it is.
Compotes and you can even do a little herb like. Fritz, you're the man, my friend.
Thank you so much. I appreciate that.
It's been Pints and Pairings.
And you know what? We'll catch you at the next bar.
Cheers.